I was top of the pile. I did what I wanted, when I wanted, for as long as I wanted. This was open city for sec men, and I could ride along the streets, and whatever I saw was mine for the asking. Nah, not even for the asking. I didn't need to ask for shit. It was all mine for the taking. Didn't matter what it was, food, booze, women, whatever I fucking wanted, it was mine. Of course, on the surface, nothing's changed. On the surface, it's still a sick man's town. On the surface, everything's like it was since Teague first hijacked the joint, way back when most of these sick men today were balling brats. But man, this place is not what it used to be. There's tension in the air. I can feel it. Shit, I can chew on it. These young guys got no idea what we had back then. Harry knows. He was with me from the start, too. Man, I could use a cigarette. These assholes make me so mad. Not a man here can blame me for rounding up a whole bunch of them. Men, women, brats, and herding them into the trucks. They ask for it. They beg for it. Take them back to their cellars, and they stop watching and whispering. Because it's hard to see with their eyes gouged out and their lips sewn together. Ah, fuck it. I'm having a cigarette. To hell with guard duty rules. Hard to hide yourself around here, especially around this big old lit-up mansion. This place is huge. Big old pre-nuke job. Who'd they say used to own it? Some guy called the bank manager or something like that? Yeah, I think that was it. Bank manager. Always have to stand on guard duty out in the light, out in the spotlights that light up the whole nine yards, the house, the lawns, the driveway. That's where I'm supposed to be. Have to show myself holding my peace, so that any guy who gets past the electrified fencing and then the outer ring of sentry hides will see me and shit himself. Yeah, right. That's the theory. But theories ain't shit sometimes. No one's gonna get up this far. The last time anyone even tried to ice the big man was when? Well, hell, has to be all of a dozen years ago. And he'd been crazy. And in any case, what had happened to him had been so bad that anyone trying the same trick would have to be triple crazy. Anyway, these nights, the lights aren't as bright as they used to be anyway, even outside this place. Screwed up generators and shit like that. That pylon around the corner flickers like crazy now. Hard on the eyes. Besides, it feels safer in the shadows. No one can see me. Not that there's anyone out there to see me anyway. Just Hines on the other side of the house. It's about time for him to come by anyway. Gotta have a buddy system, no matter what they say. I go check up on him every once in a while. He comes and checks up on me. That's just common sense. That way we know we're Jake. Come to think of it, I haven't seen him for a while now, the creep. It's his turn to check on me. Probably edged right back to the road and having a cigarette on the sly. Or a woman, maybe. Oh, man. That's exactly what I could use right now. Wouldn't be too damn smart this near to the house, though. Although I'll bet that if I... Shit. There go the bastard lights again. Completely fucking off this time. Blackout. Nice. Real fucking nice. Typical. Shit. Maybe I don't feel so safe in the dark. No moon out. Just those chem clouds shifting in from the west. God damn it. There they go. Back on again. Flickering like a son of a bitch. I swear when this happens, I can't see shit. Fuck it. Nothing to see anyway. But they really need to get their asses in gear and get some sucker to do a job on this system. It's just sloppy, and that's a fact. Tell whoever's supposed to fix this stuff that they'll get their balls bitten off by dogs if they don't wire it up the way it should be wired, and... Ow! What the fuck was that? Hines? Hines, quit fucking...
Hi. I couldn't help but overhear your conversation. Cool blow-by-blow of your night at guard duty. Let me finish for you, okay, honey? Let's see. My boss has got a knee in your back and a hand over your mouth, and now you can't yell. And your head's being dragged back so you feel your back's gonna break any moment. And all you can see is this face above you, upside down. That'd be my captain, Ryan, staring right at you, eyeball to eyeball. And then, oh, look at that. You can see this fat blade stroking right into you. Except you can't see where it's going. Only feel it, like a kiss on your throat. Mwah. There. All done. And now the blade's gone. And you're sinking backward. And there's not even a hand over your mouth anymore. And I can tell you want to yell, but you can't. You really can't. Nothing will come out. Everything's loose and oops! Smells like you just shit yourself. I think it's time for me to say so long, asshole. Have a nice night.
Drop the comedy, Hunniker, and give me a hand.
Ryan knelt, wiped his gloved hands, and then the panga on the grass, and thrust the thick-bladed weapon back into its sheath. He glanced around. Hunniker's girl had been back in the train, and Ryan could tell she was aching for revenge for her loss. But that didn't mean she was allowed to lose her cool. Hunniker bent down and took the guard's legs, and they lifted the body and heaved it into the thick shadows at the base of the building's wall, shoving it into the heart of a straggling bush. They crouched beside the bush, waiting patiently. Out here it was quiet. It was almost as if the rest of the town didn't exist. There were trees and lawns and gardens. The gardens were mostly overgrown, a wild and jungle-like tangle, although here, around Teague's mansion, some effort had been made to keep the place neatened up, to create not only a setting worthy of Moxon's lord and master, but also to carve out a loose kind of security zone around the house. There had been other large houses in this part of town, but in the neighborhood of Teague's place, they'd been either demolished or turned into pens for sec men, so that a weaponed-up enclave surrounded the mansion, small forts around the big one. That was the theory, and a brief smile twisted Ryan's lips as he thought about it. Actually, it was pathetic. Actually, security was so damned lax that a single man could have invaded Jordan Teague's sacred precincts with no trouble at all. Sure, there was an electric fence, but the power was on the fritz, as evidenced by the flickering lights, and in any case, trees had been allowed to grow over parts of the fence, and it had been a simple matter to swing over. They'd made a few kills, but there were guys out there that they hadn't needed to ice. They were so doped up. In one of the houses, every sick man they could see was higher than a bird on Happy Weed. So high, in fact, that the girls who were also there were basically being ignored, were playing cards and drinking to while away the time. Decay, thought Ryan moodily, his silenced Sig Sauer now grip-held in his right hand. The decay of empire. Look back through history, and there it was, clearly to be seen. Yet no one seemed to see it. It happened time and time again. Yet nobody ever seemed to learn the lesson. And the chilling thought was that it could happen even to the traitor and his empire, such as it was. All that had to happen was to say the hell with it once in a while. Ease up. That was all it needed.
Why don't we just take out the light system altogether? Be easier for us.
Too risky.
Hell, Ryan, no one ever know. It's shot to hell already, where those damned arcs are blinking on and off.
Too risky.
You're the boss.
Ryan checked his watch. Roughly 3 hours, 40 minutes to go. It seemed a lot, but wasn't. Not if they got caught up in something, met stiff opposition, and had to shoot their way out. It wasn't very long at all. There was one barrier to success. It was known, it must be known by now, that their little group was outside the net. The guys on the barriers at the edge of town would surely have reported back to Teague or Strasser, probably the latter, that Ryan's buggy had entered Moxon, unless communications were very sloppy and the guy hadn't bothered to report in. But Ryan discounted that, working on the assumption that right now the alarm was out and Strasser's goons were searching for them. Speed was therefore of the essence. And not only for him, but for Strasser, too. Strasser would need time to think, to plan. A couple of miles outside Moxon, he had a dozen vehicles in a circle. 2 war wags and land wags, trucks, container rigs, full of stiffs, full of hardware, and weaponry, and food, and all kinds of trade goods, and he couldn't touch them. Strasser had them in his hand, they were his, but they might just as well be on the moon. The only way he was going to be able to get inside them was if someone gave him the key. Someone told him how to bypass the booby traps and render them harmless. Without the key, the poor fucker was basically up the creek. Except that he also had the traitor. That was a powerful card. Everyone knew that the traitor's men were fiercely loyal to the old man. Strasser's idea would be either to break him or torture him so that someone else would break to save the traitor. What Strasser didn't know was that the intense loyalty of those who worked with the traitor extended into virtually a vow of silence if anything ever went badly wrong. It was impressed into every man and woman never to blab about anything. Sure, there were probably weak links in the chain. In any large organization, there were bound to be. But Ryan, running through those who were now spark out in the mini-convoy, couldn't think of any. And the traitor himself wouldn't talk. He was one tough old buzzard. The traitor wouldn't talk even if devils from hell were peeling his skin off inch by inch, layer by layer. As he'd always said,
"If they get me, forget me."
That applied to any situation. Strasser didn't know any of that, of course, and even if he did, he would never credit it, would never be able to understand it. The bastard was in for a shock. He was going to pay for so casually destroying so many lives, exterminating without a thought so many good men and women. And as Ryan thought that, his face bleak, his mouth a thin, tight line, he saw images of the girl Christy in his mind, and bared his teeth in a soundless snarl. Images of her in the Muti camp barn, smoke-smudged, disheveled, her clothes just rags on her, driven by a dynamism he admired in any woman or man. Then, having done what had to be done, utterly weary, almost defenseless. And then in the war wag, by turns argumentative, amused, angry, sardonic, sorrowing. So many emotions, so many different facets. A complex and fascinating woman. It had been a case of instant attraction, he had to admit, although that was no big deal in itself. So often it happened, and you took what was offered, if it was offered, and a course was then run to a terminal point, beyond which there was nothing else, and that was that. But with Christy, there had been more, far more, even though he had only known her for what? A couple of hours? Not longer than that. There had been a promise there, a promise of depths he could only guess at, of aggression, submission, self-possession, great intelligence, and a deep sensuality that proclaimed itself quietly, with no unnecessary fanfare in her eyes. Her fathomless eyes. But now he had to forget all that and put her out of his mind. He turned on the crouch, saw three figures threading through the gloom toward them, coming around the side of the house. JB eased close, the tall blonde Call and Samantha the Panther in tow.
"We can either blitz in fast or do it quiet. If we do it quiet, at some point we're going to hit opposition. And although we're using suppressors, they're not. There could be plenty of bang-bang, and even those dummies in town will get to thinking there's something up when that happens."
"I go for initially quiet."
"Same here. Once we have Teague, fuck it. Doesn't matter. Make as much noise as we like. The louder the better, because I want Strasser up here and talking."
Built on a knoll, the house was big, rambling. The man who'd owned it so many years before was prosperous, a power in the town. In the windows, lamplight could be seen through chinks in the closed shutters beyond the glass. But there was no sound of revelry or celebration. Jordan Teague was having a quiet evening at home, probably among his loved ones, although that wouldn't include such mundane items as wife and kids.
"Outhouses at the rear, a lot of old garbage. There's two side doors, but they ain't been open in 100 years. Rear door opens, passageway to it. There were two guys there. Now they're bundles in the garbage."
"Main door's not locked. You go in the back, head upstairs, check that out, and hold the upper story. We'll go in the front, wait for you. 2 minutes. Any goons, kill them quick."
"Women?"
"If they pull on you, sure. If not, disable them, tie them up, whatever. We're not animals. You got 2 minutes. Call, you stay with me."
He gave JB his 2 minutes, then turned to the porch. As he'd said, the door was unlocked. Punicker had already checked that out. The door handle was big and round. He turned it, pushed, went through fast, the silenced SIG in his right hand, Punicker behind him, Call at the rear. They saw a large hallway, wide stairs facing them, a passageway to the left, diving to the rear of the house. There were closed doors right and left. The hallway was unlit, except for chinks of light below the doors. There was a strong stink of incense, mixed in with the burned straw smell of happy weed. Ryan could hear the mutter of conversation from the door on his left. Muted laughter, nothing else. JB materialized, moving quickly but silently up the passageway toward him, followed by Rintoul and Sam. Hennings, a murderous bastard at the best of times who stood no nonsense from antagonists, was out back. JB and the other two turned to the stairs, raced silently up them, keeping to the side. They fanned out on the landing above and disappeared. Ryan nodded to Honecker, then gestured at the door on the left. She now held a squat Ingram Mac 11, a classic weapon. Call stood by the now-closed main door, a little to one side, a lappa in his hands. Ryan moved to the left-hand door, Honecker at his side. Without hesitation, he twisted the handle and shoved the door inward. They both jumped into the room, taking in everything in a split second. 7 men, black jacketed or in shirt sleeves. 5 sitting at a round table in the center playing cards, 1 standing beside the table, smoking and holding a bottle, 1 in the act of walking unhurriedly down the room toward another door at the far end. The sudden opening of the door caused the 7 men, as one, to gape in stunned amazement.
Who the fuck are you?
2 of the men at the table sprang up, shoving their chairs back, pulling at shoulder-rigged pieces. It was enough. Hunniker, her body taut, her eyes narrowed, a feral growl at her lips, squeezed off her mag. As Hunniker had begun her squeeze, Ryan had thrown up his SIG. His prime target was the man at the end of the room, the man near the far door. Without pause, Ryan swung to the right and heart-shot the man with a bottle. The man hit the wall behind him, slid down it, arms wide, coat riding up to his shoulders as he sank.
Move! Move!
Her right hand remagging the Mac, Hunniker sprinted across the room, silently hurdling the bodies. She reached the end door with Ryan at her heels. Again, he gripped the handle, twisted, this time pulling it open. Hunniker sprang through the gap before it was fully opened, Ryan jumping through after her, his SIG left-handed now. It was a short passage, one door at the end half open, and light streaming through the gap. The light was mostly blocked off by a man standing in the opening, holding a tray with bottles on it.
Shit!
Ryan two-rounded him.
What the hell?
Hun flew down the passage, her boots barely touching down, her short, loose coat billowing out behind her like bat's wings. She leapt into the room on the turn, and the Mac 11 was spitting even as her feet hit carpet.
Damn!
Ryan reached the doorway, saw Hunniker lowering the machine pistol, a savage expression on her face. She turned away from him. The room was a kitchen. The only guy there had been butchering meat on a block in the center of the room with a cleaver. He'd taken most of the Mac's mag, had been powered back into a table with glassware and copper pans and skillets on it, and now sagged backward, feet in the air, arms hanging, most of his chest blown out, and blood splashed over floor and walls.
Poor innocent fuck. And all the noise, too.
You had to do it blind. Could have been a garrison in here. Forget it.
The room stank of powder and blood. It smelled like a slaughterhouse. Ryan touched Hunniker on the arm, then clasped her to him, his eye taking in the fact that the windows all were shuttered and there were 3 doors off to one side. He could feel Hunniker trembling slightly.
Shit. She was such a sweet kid, Ryan. Damn it. I miss her. You don't know what it's like.
No. Probably not.
Okay. Shit. I'm okay. Let's go. I'll get us all killed at this rate.
Ryan checked out the 3 doors. Storerooms. Nothing there. They went back along the passage, through the big room, and warily out into the hallway. Cole gave him the thumb up.
You hear anything?
What's to hear? The door we just came through? Good paneling there, Ryan. Thick as hell. You make any noise?
Evidently not so as you'd notice.
He glanced up, saw JB at the head of the stairs, alone, holding up his left hand, 4 fingers extended. His expression was deadpan. 4 kills, everything Jake. Ryan shot a look at Hunniker and discovered that she was staring straight at him. He inclined his head toward the right-hand door, under which no light could be seen, and raised an eyebrow. Hunniker nodded almost eagerly as she slipped a 3rd mag into the guts of the Mac 11.
You sure?
For Christ's sake, Ryan!
He shrugged. It amused him how people still invoke the name of a deity, or as he understood it from his reading, some kind of secondary deity who seemed to be a son of the primary deity. But he did it himself when cussing or expressing shock or anger, often using words that had no meaning for him whatsoever. Although that, of course, was a legacy from his father, who'd done exactly the same, and probably his father before him, and so on back to pre-nuke. For a second, as he thought like this, the image of his father began to form in his mind. But he blocked it off quickly, the hand that held the SIG clenching involuntarily, so that he nearly squeezed off around into the floor. He shook his head to clear the image finally, shake the memories away. These days it was easier, thank God. A brief smile twitched his lips as he realized he was invoking the deity himself. He stepped to the right-hand door, thought about powering in as before, but something, he didn't quite know what, stopped him. His gloved hand took hold of the knob-like handle, twisted it firmly, though tugging at it so that no hint of a sound came from the movement. He gently eased the door open slightly. 2 inches. There was only darkness beyond. The smell of incense was much stronger here, a positive assault on the senses. He could hear the faint murmur of someone talking, but as if from afar. He pushed the door more, slipped through. He sensed that Hunniker was behind him, and half turned his head to her.
Close the door, but not tight.
Ryan stared at the warm blackness, half closing his eye, then opening it again wide. Over on his left, in front, was a narrow smear of murky light in the air, which at first he could make no sense of. The light danced, a flickering glow. Then gradually, Ryan began to sort out details of the room. Or half-room. It was big, high-ceilinged. There was no furniture, but the floor was carpeted. Across the room, from wall to wall, hung some kind of thick curtain. 2 curtains, actually, pulled together. Hence that chink of light in the center, where the inner folds of the 2 draperies didn't quite meet.
Another big night with the sows, is that right, Doc? You don't behave, you'll get my foot as well.
Ryan slid the SIG back down into its belt rig and reached for the lappa, holding it one-handed as he silently stepped across the room toward the curtain. There was no point now in using a silenced piece. He'd reached his goal. The voice he heard beyond the thick draperies belonged to Jordan Teague. He reached the gap in the curtain. It couldn't have been positioned better if some guy had actually set it up for him, eye high. Breathing through his mouth, the lappa held down at his side, he peered through into a singularly bizarre scene. There were candles everywhere, their flames fluttering and guttering in the drafts. It seemed as if there were 1,000 candles at first, 10,000. Seemed as though the room itself was vast, extending way beyond the bounds of sanity. But of course, it was a mirror effect. Long mirrors on all the walls, to the front of him and to the sides, even fixed down over the closed shutters of the windows on the right-hand wall. Ryan glanced up, his eye widening, even covering the ceiling. For the rest, there was not much furniture in the room, although the place could not be said to be bare. On the floor were thick rugs, all sizes, all shapes and patterns and colors, or combinations of colors. There were 2 pot-bellied stoves on the right, doors wide, heat belching out. Pipes from the top of each rose into the air, sagging drunkenly in badly welded sections, disappearing into the mirrored ceiling. A couple of small tables, both of which seemed to Ryan's mildly discriminating eye to be more than just well-carved, really old period pieces probably, stood toward the center, smoke rising from large bowls on them. He couldn't see what was burning, but it was sure as hell the source of the rich, cloying stink that permeated the room. But it was what reared up high center stage, but toward the far end, that dragged the word bizarre into his mind. A kind of stepped pyramid, twice the height of a man, maybe more, and flat on top. Ryan couldn't see how it was constructed, because it was covered with a piece of rich red material, tacked in so that the step treads were tight, and thus climbable without getting one's feet tangled up in the folds. Atop it sat a wide, high-backed wing chair, plain wood from what he could see of it. There wasn't much, though, because of the occupant's size and the fact that it was partially covered in more material that, as Ryan stared at it, became vaguely familiar to him. After a few seconds searching his memory, it became entirely recognizable. He could just make out white stars on a patch of blue, vivid red bars on white. A real relic from pre-nuke days, a huge version of what they'd called the national flag of this land, when it had been a unified country, a power in the world. Ryan stared at the figure, sprawled grossly and grotesquely in the chair, seeming to fill it to overflowing, 1 foot on the platform, the knee bent back, the other leg hanging over the top step. Except for black knee-length riding boots, worn and dulled, he was evidently naked under what looked to be some kind of fantastic robe, blue in color, thickly lined with soiled white fur, and open at the front. His massive belly bulged in folds, lapping at his thighs. His flesh was pinkish, his face red, the cheeks sagging around a small, thick-lipped mouth, around which was a fringe of white stubble. The eyes were tiny, flesh-choked beads. His head was flung back so that he was gazing up at the mirrored ceiling as he talked, his image gazing back down at him. In his right pudgy hand, he held a thick cigar, which, from the look of it, consisted entirely of dry-cured happy-weed leaves, rolled tight. Jordan Teague, Baron of Moxon. Ryan almost couldn't believe his eyes. For a moment convinced that the incense that clogged the air was some kind of drug, and that what he was seeing was a weird, outrageous vision. But it was real enough. 2 years had clearly made a hell of a difference. Teague had been fat, sure, but this was way different. The guy looked as if he'd need help walking. Or maybe he stayed up there the whole time. There'd been nothing remotely like this in the old days. Teague had gotten around town, done his business, kept a firm hand on things. In many ways, as Ryan remembered it from the trader, who knew the background, Jordan Teague had been a typical baron. He'd come up the hard way. Father and mother had he none, that he knew of. He'd cut his own path in one of the southern baronies, and discovered that, as long as he was paid for it, in food, creds, or women, he didn't mind killing for his living. Didn't mind at all. He became head blaster for a small-time baron, supplanted him in a bloody coup, and was then, after some years, himself ousted by his own head blaster. There is very often such a symmetry in these matters, although Teague broke the pattern by being slightly quicker on the uptake than his predecessor and escaping with his life. He drifted into the central Deathlands and took up with a band of Mutey marauders who had a rather more liberal attitude toward norms than most. That is, they accepted him, instead of spit-roasting him over a slow fire and eating him. They had a good 2 years together, looting, pillaging, and raping. But then they came upon what on the surface appeared to be a sleepy but fairly prosperous settlement ripe for slaughter and rape, some distance south of the ruins of Old St. Louis. In fact, it turned out to be a setup by the angry inhabitants of the entire area, who were, after 2 years of hell, not unnaturally pissed off with the marauders' continual depredations and were red-hot for vengeance. The marauders broke up, literally. As they drove in, they hit a wall of firepower, much of it having been hoarded for years, which destroyed them, their trucks, their jeeps, their women, their bags and traps. Teague, a man of violence but no great brain, for once in his life acted smart by mingling with the normals in the subsequent massacre, and distinguished himself by gunning down, with a close-range burst from a handheld machine gun, the Mutey leader, a guy with a curious pig-like snout and the manners to go with it. Actually, Teague didn't merely gun him down, but cut him in two. It was that close a range. And then blew his head off, just to be sure. Some days later, some busybody with a sharp memory accused him of being one of the band. There was an altercation that Teague won by the simple expedient of icing his opponent with a pump action. He said it was in righteous rage at such a calumny, but there were those who thought he'd been suspiciously overzealous in pulling his piece and began to get sulky with him. Teague wisely beat it, drifted northwest, landed up in Moxon. It was ripe for a takeover by someone, and he figured he fitted the bill. Just about then he bumped into the trader, who'd recently fallen across his first stockpile, together with his buddy Marsh Folsom, and had a raft of factory-fresh fowling pieces and mucho ammo to match. Teague had no jack whatsoever, but he did have an astounding stroke of luck. He came across a guy who'd been mooching about in the hills to the southwest of Moxon and discovered seams of yellow in the rocks. Someone later figured out that the gold had been uncovered by the last rippling tremors from the West Coast cataclysm, when Sove earthshaker bombs and missiles back in the nuke had carved out a new coastline, taking out half of Washington State, Oregon, and California, and the whole of Baja California. But such geological pedantry was of no interest to Jordan Teague, who simply deep-sixed the sucker and grabbed his nuggets. With these, he bought a passel of 5.56mm M16A1s, modified to handle the M203 grenade launcher, crates of mags, plus boxes, assorted, of 40mm rounds for the grenade launchers, including HE Frag and M576 Buck. Teague being Teague, he would have liked to have had free what he had to pay for, and pay for highly. But even then, word had gotten around that you didn't fuck with the trader. And in any case, Teague had the location of the strike. Unwisely, the panhandler had made a map. And it was more than likely that there was more where the first haul had come from. There was indeed, as Teague discovered after he and an assorted bunch of murderous trash had subdued Moxon and set up there in style. In short order, he began to mine the yellow stuff and ship it out east. Slowly at first, but in the past decade, more